My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the EDP Formula One podcast after the British Grand Prix. It was a very good British Grand Prix as well. Good race, home winner. What more can you want? My name is Michael Bailey, as that little clip at the start said. I'm joined today by a quartet of quality Formula One pundits, I'm going to call you all. Lucky guys. Yeah, indeed. Carl Cumbers is here. Hello, Carl.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Yeah, not bad at all. Bit sunburned.
Yes.
From golf this morning. So are you...
From Saturday. At Silverstone. Somehow got sunny for an hour and I got sunburned.
So. Yeah, well done. That was an achievement. We'll talk about that in a bit. Stephen Rust is here. Hello, Steve.
Hello. Hello. Are you all right?
Yes, very good. Thank you. Are you well?
Yeah, good, yeah.
You enjoy the race?
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant.
Wasn't it? It was very enjoyable. Mr. DT's here too, Dave Tillier, prediction man himself, which we'll come on to later.
Yeah, I was quite excited watching the race, trying to see if any of it was coming true, and, you know.
Don't reveal it. Although we already have, really, on Twitter. Did you put any money on it?
No.
All 22 drivers were given a predicted finish by DT. In the last podcast, we'll come on to that in part two.
Optimistic, I think, was my frame of or my mentality last week.
It was an achievement just making the prediction, to be honest. That was good. It took long enough, didn't it?
Yeah.
Richard Baxter's here. Good afternoon. Good evening. It is evening, isn't it? Yeah, it is evening.
Either one.
Did you enjoy that race on Sunday?
I did. I was buzzing, as they say.
That's it. Hashtag buzzing. Hashtag buzzing, as I'm sure it was Lewis Hamilton, who sort of went from rock bottom to Silverstone hero. I suppose it's very difficult to talk about the race without talking about qualifying first. He mucked that up. And you were there on the Saturday, Carl. So what was it like watching Lewis Hamilton muck that up on Saturday?
It was very up and down because everybody was excited. It looked like he got pole and the rain was coming down. So I sat there thinking, oh, this is qualifying over. And they all came out, and I thought he saw obviously Rosberg up behind Hamilton. So he thought, well, he's not going to improve. He's not going to be Hamilton anyway. And he sort of sat there waiting just for qualifying to end, and then all these times get popping up on the screen, going, "Hey, wait a minute, Vettel's quickest," and then Button's up there, and he thought, "Oh, we're going to be a good battle between Hamilton and Rosberg." Obviously, we can see from where I was sitting what was going on, and then he saw Rosberg go the line. I was thinking, "Where's Hamilton?" And
he was in the pits.
Yeah. And so everybody just went, oh, apart from one bloke in the stand that was obviously a Rosberg fan.
There's always one.
So, Silverstone was sort of a bit quiet after that. And so everybody was excited about a possible Lewis Hamilton win, or pole and win. But, yeah, it was still a very good day.
They got there in the end. I suppose the interesting thing for me, clearly Lewis gave Nico a bit of a slipstream and then pulled away from him. But it didn't look like Hamilton's lap was going to be quicker anyway. I know the last section was clearly fast, but he was all over the place and clearly slower than Nico Rosberg in the first section of that flying lap.
I mean, he may well have been, may not have been as fast as Rosberg, but he wouldn't have been sixth, I think is probably the biggest point. He would have most likely beaten Vettel, really. Definitely beaten Button, so... that's where he lost out because he lost the places, but you know,
it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Did we all see? This is the last probably point on the qualifying, that Lewis's post qualifying interview. Did you get to see that?
He saw the big screens. Yeah,
I mean, wow, it was, and for him then to pick himself up, and he was pretty good, pretty good, in, you know, before the race on Sunday, and then, bang! I mean, he delivered, didn't he?
Yeah, I think some of that was helped with the fact it was a home Grand Prix. I think I read somewhere that he went and stayed at his mum's, you know, the night, and I think it was kind of just being at home and probably calming down a bit and gather his thoughts and sort of think, well, should have been pole or could have been, but sixth is not too bad. You know, it's better than the previous one, which was ninth. And look what he did from ninth. So, you know, I think he probably just picked up some more positivity on it and, you know, started Sunday as a fresh day, really.
Because he carried it through in the race as well, didn't he, with the pit stop that went a bit awry. And they thought, oh, don't worry, lads, next pit stop will be great. And that's not the Lewis I normally say. What are you doing?
I thought it was a pre-record.
But I suppose it summed up his mental state, didn't it?
Yeah, he said, I think in the podium interviews I had, I think he said something along the lines of, oh, thank you to all the fans when I got here this morning, you're all so supportive, and that really helped me. And I think he's one of those kind of drivers who has to feel he's loved. And I think if you go, oh, you've done this wrong, you know, what you're playing at, he'll only get worse. Whereas if you put your arm around him and say, come on, you're better than this, you can move forward, I think he is that kind of person who would.
It's a bit of a shame because the race was actually really nicely teed up, because it looked like the two drivers were going to have separate strategies. Maybe Lewis at one point in life was going to do a one stop and then sort of backed out of it a bit. It's difficult to tell whether Nico's gearbox problem that sent him out of the race was the sole reason for Lewis possibly taking him later on.
Yeah, unfortunately we'll never know really, but it's just a shame that, like I said, it could be one of the greatest British Grand Prix, you know, Hamilton chasing down, the home favourite chasing down, and possibly winning and overtaking. Because he was obviously going along on the first stint, so it would have been made it interesting. And like I said, he did have the option of a one stop. I think they just played it safe at the end, because he's so far ahead.
So
I think we missed out on that, but I suppose he's had his bad luck, especially last year at Silverstone, so I don't think the crowd cared too much.
No, I think he was owed that one, definitely. Did it kill the race, really, Rosberg's retirement?
Probably in terms of, like, who's going to finish on top, but generally it didn't, because, I mean, we had other tussles, you know, a little way down the road as well, which made the race equally as exciting. But I think Hamilton would have got it anyway, because as soon as he put that different tyre on, he was a second a lap quicker and catching him. And it wasn't until he got to about sort of 3 seconds away from him when Rosberg's gearbox just gave up, pretty much. So I think he would have got past him then anyway. I mean, Rosberg was still early on in his stint with the other set of tyres, which he would have had to persevere with. And even if he had done an earlier stop to get on to the other tyres, he wouldn't have necessarily been as quick. So I think overall, I think just by a little bit of luck there, I think Hamilton would have had it with the difference in tyres.
Would I be right in saying that every race Lewis has finished, he's won?
No.
Which?
Second in Monaco.
Second in Austria.
Austria.
So he hasn't done that at all.
No.
We'll cut that bit out.
Been on the podium, I believe, every race has finished.
Been on the podium, every race has finished. Yeah. And this was the first time Nico Rosberg wasn't in the top two. Presumably his first retirement.
So I think if Lewis hadn't had those two DNFs before, I think Rosberg having a DNF might have been possibly bad for the championship, but it just keeps it open, keeps it alive. And because it was the British Grand Prix, it just, you know, no one was really that sorry for Rosberg, I think, there, apart from maybe the team, but
the one bloke that Kyle
said Saturday, and the bloke that got all the old sandwiches thrown at him in the stands, probably.
Well, it's the German Grand Prix next, so Nico can return the favour. I suppose Nico's still 2-1 up on retirements, if that makes sense. He's had one, and Lewis has had two, so there's still a bit of space there. Lewis seemed to be trying to make out he was emotional after winning it in the green room. He's rubbing his eyes a lot, and you know what he's like, a bit of drama.
Yeah, he doesn't hide his emotions, does he? So I think you have to take it that he was emotional.
He tries to generate them himself sometimes.
I think he had a good point about the trophy, because it was a disgrace that brought that.
It broke, didn't it?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, World Cup, you don't bring out a sponsor's trophy, or a Wimbledon, you don't bring out a trophy.
He did get the gold one later on.
Yeah. He brought it back out, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, yeah, a friend of mine works for Mercedes, and he posted some pictures on Facebook of Lewis receiving the trophy, and actually my mate standing behind all three of the trophies saying, this is the rubbish plastic one, here's the proper one.
Well, that's fair enough. Did anyone else see the other stuff in the green room? Mercedes chief designer John Owen was there. He sort of seemed to make a pointed comment about Daniel Ricciardo's tyres going a bit longer than he thought, and he looked just like David Brent, I thought. Made me smile. Anyway, I just want to throw one little extra bit in. Eddie Irvine was off on one with a suggestion that Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso could swap cars next year, and Lewis would end up at Ferrari. Although I think he then repeated the rumour later on, saying, this is not right, this is a wrong rumour, but I'm going to repeat it because it might happen. Which sounded like classic Eddie. We can't see that happening, can we? Why would Lewis lose Mercedes now anyway?
I mean, he's just seen what's happened to Fernando, and, you know, if you've won six world championships and you fancy going to Ferrari just so you could, you know, have been in a Ferrari at some point in your career, fair enough, but Lewis wants championships after championships after championships, so yeah, why would he want it?
He seems really happy at Mercedes. You get the impression, I mean, he's getting on quite well with his engineer at the moment, made them nice messages.
Hammer time.
Yep, again. So yeah, I think he's getting on. I think he's enjoying his time at Mercedes. I think he's got a bit more freedom as well, possibly. So,
well, maybe we should talk about Ferrari then in a moment with the EDP F1 pit stops. Yeah, let's start at Ferrari because while we mentioned how Lewis was happy at Mercedes, I'm not sure how happy Fernando is at Ferrari, but there was a great picture of him going out in Q1 of qualifying, walking back along the paddock, and he was smiling. What's that about? Since when has Fernando Alonso smiled at being knocked out of Q1 because they mucked up?
Well, on the BBC coverage, they were interviewing them going round on their sort of little F1 truck thing. And he was sat on the edge of the truck, just really kind of just chilled out, really happy, you know, just seemed quite content with the fact that he was just going to go out there and have some fun. I think he's kind of got to the point where this season is nowhere near, he's not going to challenge for anything, so he's just going to go out and have a bit of fun and hopefully see the season out and hope for something better next year.
At Ferrari.
Well.
We will see, we will see. It was both Ferrari and Williams rather mucked up qualifying, has to be said. Kimi seemed to break his anonymity so far this season with a huge crash that, of course, delayed the Grand Prix for a whole hour on the Sunday while they fixed an Armco. There's a debate over Niki Lauda's comments to come on the back of that. It was a really nasty one, and Felipe Massa somehow avoided it, and Kamui Kobayashi as well. They both did well to avoid Kimi's car.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was an interesting kind of crash because he ran wide onto some tarmac, and then you saw him rejoin. And I mean, I was watching it live, and I thought, has a Ferrari gone wide back there? And then the camera went down, and the next thing I just saw a massive crash. I'm kind of, what's going on here? When you look at the replay, and as he's come back on, he's gone on the grass, and he's just stayed on the throttle, and it's just kind of, you know, the back end's obviously flipped up as he's joined the road. I just thought, why did he stay on the throttle when he's on grass? You know, it's happened, people have done it before, and it's not ended well. And you thought, for someone of Kimi's experience, he could have avoided it, I think, to be honest.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that, because it did seem like he joined it. Like, I mean, obviously he got lifted in the air, which would have knocked things out, but he did seem to then lose control, obviously, horribly. And
did, I mean, I thought he was lucky to not, like, break his wrists, because I don't know if you saw one of the replays, but he was a bit late taking his hands off. And even I just sort of cringe, you know, because sometimes if they're still holding the steering wheel like that and the wheels get flipped around, that breaks their wrist, doesn't it, if it's a high-speed impact. But he was very close to you know, doing something to his wrists on that, on one of the replays I saw on the onboards on the internet. But it's hard. I mean, what did they calculate, something like 48 Gs or something they said in during the thing? I mean, I was watching the Grand Prix with my dad, and I leaned over to him, and I mean, he's quite into his aircraft and stuff like that, and he says that after 30 or 40 something you black out. So how he managed to avoid, well, unless he did black out,
he didn't look particularly well when he came out of the car.
He definitely limped off, didn't he?
Yeah.
I suppose, do we know for definite how Kimi is? He seemed to have a damaged ankle, but nothing broken was the last thing I heard. Yeah. But
I mean, he said bruising, I think, is what I heard.
He's not done the test this week.
Yeah, Bianchi's
fit. Yeah,
Bianchi's sitting in for him, I think.
Fair enough. Max Chilton narrowly avoided a tire, yeah, a whole wheel, which I mean, again, thankful for that.
Well, he didn't avoid it, did he? It hit the car.
Well, yeah, the truth. Well, his head avoided it. thankfully. Now, apparently, it was the first red flag after the first lap of a Grand Prix since Monaco 2000. There you go. It kept the race delayed for an hour, which, according to Niki Lauda, It's a disgrace because Formula One was over-regulated, which I suppose from Niki Lauda carries different weight to maybe other drivers given the things he went through. It was a good debate between him and Eddie Jordan, which Niki seemed to be agreeing with, but then he was just annoyed.
Yeah, I didn't see that bit, but I think it's easier for us to say, I'll just get on with it. And there probably will never be another crash there for 20 years, but...
Another crash in that position, that place, ever, again. Yeah.
So it's just, unfortunately, the circuit's got to protect itself, isn't it? So.
Well, that's the thing is, safety is what comes first, especially when, that impact, he said, was 150 miles an hour. And you think, if you're crashing at that speed, you need safety there. Mm. I mean, I do sort of agree that they did take a long time getting it fixed, replacing the barrier. You'd have hoped they could have had, some tyres or something they could have dragged on in place to put there for the time being so they could get it sorted out within 20 minutes. But it was an hour. It was quite a long time to wait. But to be honest, when it comes to safety, you can't risk it, can you, at all? So.
Yeah, I mean, I personally agree with Niki sort of 95%. Of the way, because I think it's kind of detrimental to the sport, because fans that have never been before, they come in expecting to watch a race and they sit around for an hour watching nothing, and that's got to be quite frustrating for people coming and spending the money to buy the tickets, but at the same time, I suppose health and safety has got to rule, but you've got to find that balance. And I think the health and safety, yes, but they've got to have something better in place to be able to fix, because now it's just ridiculous.
That was because Ben Edwards started off the BBC commentary saying, welcome back, if you're watching Formula 1 back for the first time in ages, well, welcome back, you'll love new Formula 1, here you go. And about 30 seconds later, there was a massive stop, and that was that for an hour. I would like to know how many of those people then carried on waiting for the half an hour and then watched the rest of it. Let's touch on Williams, shall we? Massa. It was nice to hear the crowd applaud Massa as he walked off following his retirement down the pits. The good crowd at Silverstone, aren't they? They always applaud everything. Everyone's all respected, which is fair to say. A great race from Bottas, who seemed to carry a lot of pace.
I mean, a lot of speed as well. I mean, he was just charging through the field, with what looked like considerably more horsepower, or straight line speed for that matter. I mean, he charged, 14th to finish second or something?
18th,
was it? It was a bit lower.
The grid was a mess, wasn't it? Because there were so many penalties being bandied around. But Bottas had have qualified higher up the grid.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe. Well, perhaps not challenged the pace of the Mercedes. But it would have been interesting,
And they're on a bit of form now, aren't they, Williams? This is good to see. We're not used to them maybe challenging like this.
Yeah, they were really down on the Saturday after qualifying, having had a really good qualifying session in Austria. And they were really, really down, but they just showed that they can still, even with a pretty rubbish Saturday, they can turn that into a very good Sunday.
Ooh, it's exciting. Red Bull, Mark Webber back on the TV. He's good on TV, Mark Webber. He's very good on TV, I have to say. Great little line from David Coulthard as he was talking about Sebastian Vettel. I think it was on the grid walk. Said that we hadn't seen that middle finger salute for a while. One finger salute. Well done, DC. Did I say DC or DT?
You did say DC.
Did I say it? Yeah.
I can pretend to be there if you like.
Whichever. A word on Red Bull's performance, I suppose. Vettel again falling behind Daniel Ricciardo, as we will call him, and I will get right. Very calm after getting his podium, Daniel, and got out of the car. But there was this fist pump. He was pumping his fist. Yeah. And it was completely different to earlier on in the season. But you could just tell he's like, yes.
Again, sort of nice wave to the crowd and sort of walked this sort of corner, isn't it? Sort of walked around the corner and just, good fist pump. I thought Vettel was a bit unlucky, the strategy. He ended up on the two stop. And as I said earlier, Ricciardo could do the one stop. So Vettel was a bit unlucky, but Ricciardo, he seems quite comfortable on the podium now, and
real deal.
Yeah, Vettel messed up his start, didn't he?
Caught terribly,
sixth or something like that, was it? But then he kept moving back. But he had a good fight with Alonso as well. Vettel, but
brilliant fight.
He also had a bad start.
Yeah, but it was quite good to see those two really at it and to be closely matched, but. When he was past Alonso, he just pulled away. He could tell he was in a superior car. And I thought, Should it have taken him that long to pass in some ways?
He's got like straight line speed, I think, unfortunately, Red Bull, which is, he's even sort of on board, didn't he, with Alonso just slowly pulling away down the old start finish line. So I think they just need,
Renault need to do something, don't they? Red Bull keep giving them a poke to get them to do it. Full of insights and observations this weekend. Sergio Perez was wearing a Force India cap on the starting grid, unlike the ones where it's normally, you know, stitched in their signature. This one, it seemed like he just signed his own cap.
Yeah, obviously wants a bit of his own memorabilia.
Why he's wearing his own signed cap?
The only thing I could think of is that just before he was about to get in the car, he was going to take it off and chuck it into the crowd. That was my assumption when I saw it.
That's nice if he's actually signing those caps as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that would make sense.
Or he just likes signing caps.
You're practicing.
Here's another one I noticed from Sauber. Adrian Sutil was standing on the grid eating half a banana. There was a woman sitting next to him holding the other half of the banana. He's got someone holding, feeding him his banana. Speaking of which, we've got chocolates in the pod today to celebrate the British Grand Prix and Lewis Hamilton's success. So,
Talking of food, I don't know whether you saw the Nico Rosberg picture from Mercedes today. He sat in his Formula One car with like what looked like a fillet of salmon with pasta and veg on a plate with a knife and fork, but he was sat in the car just.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, during the red flag, he was eating then, wasn't he?
Yeah,
potatoes. Pineapple or potato?
It was potatoes he eats on the grid.
I thought it was pineapple, but pineapple. Yeah.
Apparently, he does like to eat a lot. He's constantly munching.
Right, so he must be one of the smaller drivers so he can get away with it. Poor old Mark Webber couldn't. There was some great overtaking. Let's stop off at McLaren. Jenson Button, 0.8 seconds away from his first podium at his home race. In how many attempts? 14, 12? Something like that, wasn't it? Are we all gutted?
Very.
Yeah. Very. I mean, I'm not the biggest Button fan, if I'm entirely honest, but by that point, I was already, you know, happy that Hamilton was going to win it. And I was sitting there cheering him on, you know, come on. Yeah. But it just was, I think, probably maybe another lap or two, you know, and he probably would have got it. But
and the shame. Yeah, and the old pink for Papa helmet was pretty cool, I thought, as well.
It was, yeah, everyone supported that.
Yeah, I thought that was good. I never thought a pink helmet would look quite would look cool, or, you know, but, yeah. No. And I don't know whether anyone saw the BBC coverage with David Coulthard and JB going round London on
the bikes,
and they're pulling up to that taxi driver, and he said, "Are you famous? that's Jenson Button."
He did realise then, thankfully.
Yeah. I also thought he was very nice in letting Hamilton by quite early on.
Yes.
Yeah, as he said beforehand, he wanted Hamilton to win.
Yeah.
And he didn't make it hard for him. He's like, go through.
I think that spurred him on with his pink helmet as well.
Mm.
And just because of his dad and all that's happened, I think the fans were all fully behind him, supporting him. And I think that really spurred him on to do something better. You know, I think he kind of tried to make his dad proud in that moment as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think he proved Ron Dennis wrong.
So it worked?
Yeah.
What Ron was doing actually worked, which was, of course, telling Jensen to pull his finger out along with other people.
Yeah, basically.
That was brilliant, listening to Jensen having to answer all those questions. We should touch on Caterham, of course, one of our local marks, who are now under new ownership. They've got a lot to do. They've got a new team principal, obviously Colin Collis back from HRT to Caterham. He's not had great success in Formula One, has he, Colin?
But he's not team principal, though, is he? Christian Albers.
Oh, no, Christian Albers, that's right.
Which I find really weird. I can't remember the last time a Formula One driver was a team boss as well.
He's a Spiker. The race hall, no?
Because Prost had his own team, didn't he, in like late 90s?
Yeah, Berger.
Yeah, Berger with Toro Rosso, yeah.
Toro Rosso,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But not many.
No.
Jackie Stewart.
Yeah. Gerhard Berger was quite good as well, whereas Christian Albers.
We don't know yet, DT. Do
well,
we
as,
know?
As a driver.
Oh, as a driver. Oh, yeah. We know that one. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, they obviously want 10th, but they're miles behind Mauricio at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah,
they didn't even qualify properly.
No.
And they don't have the ability to take advantage of any positive situations.
No. So you can sort of see Marussia are a happy team and everything's going well and they can take advantage of situations like they did on Saturday. But yeah, Caterham seem, like I say, a long way behind, and so we don't know who owns the team now, and it just seems a bit of a mess at the moment, unfortunately.
Doesn't seem to be much consistency with Caterham, especially the last few years, because, I mean, for example, if you look at Marussia, they've, you know, this is the second season they've had Bianchi and Chilton in, and Caterham, I'm not sure if I'm right saying this, but I believe, was it the only two they kept on were Kovalainen and Trulli from when they very first started?
Yeah.
That's a two consecutive seasons, wasn't it? And they're the only ones. So they seem to be getting like Eriksson, you know, is he going to be there next year? You don't know. You'd expect Kobayashi to, because he's obviously proved himself before.
The problem is the two drivers are now someone else's drivers, aren't they? So you'd expect that the lineup will change again next next winter, assuming the team is there. You have to say that which is a shame, because it's a lot of good people down there.
And I think the other problem that Caterham have is that the Marussia car is a really solid car. You know, it's not that far off, you know, the Saubers, for example. So they've actually, you know, they have stepped up, and it's also a reliable car as well, which I think Caterham struggle with as well. So.
Yeah, I said as well, you look at Marussia, they kind of said, let's go for something we know that works and improve it from there, whereas Caterham seems to go, let's take a bit of a risk, let's go for something that's a bit quirky, a bit different to everything else, and hope it works, it seemed to me.
A solid, reliable car built in the very mould of Max Chilton, almost. And Lotus, we should touch on as well. I mean, they are having a dog of a season. Paul Roman is a good driver, and he doesn't deserve to be trancing around in a car that's not really doing a lot for him. They're going to be changing to Mercedes engines probably next season from Renault.
Definitely.
Is it definitely? Yeah. I saw there were some hurdles.
But it was confirmed on Sunday, wasn't it?
It was definitely confirmed.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting, given that the whole team was a Renault team. It was, you know, it was the works Renault team at Enstone. That's a big move. It says, well, poor Renault. What's it say for them?
It's worrying times, isn't it? I think, you know, if it wasn't for Red Bull, I think if I was Renault, I'd be thinking, should we be sticking at this?
I suppose the problem with Renault is they were the only engine manufacturer with four teams to deal with, I think.
And Mercedes got four.
And Mercedes got four as well.
Obviously, they're losing McLaren to Honda. Lotus have replaced McLaren. So, but yeah, there's sort of rumours that their contracts with Red Bull finish next year, 2015. Yeah. Sort of rumours they may sort of.
Yeah. I'm going to make a prediction for next week, or for the next race rather. I think Eddie Jordan's going to predict that Ferrari are going to move to Mercedes engines. That sounds like an Eddie Jordan prediction.
Might save them some money, to be honest.
He does say some funny things, to be fair, on Eddie Jordan, but.
Just some. Okay, of the weekends then, gentlemen, let's rattle through these, shall we? Driver of the weekend. A few candidates this week. Who wants to go first? Let's go. Who are we going to go? Driver.
I can go first if you wish.
He loves going first, Steve. He does. Go on then.
That's because I always write this bit down before leaving the house.
Notes.
Well, it would be easy enough to probably say Hamilton. But to be honest, I'm going to go with Bottas, the same as the last race, or previous race to Silverstone. I thought he had a cracking race, you know, through charging through the field and then looking after his tyres and maintaining the second place, you know, for the bulk of the Grand Prix.
And didn't botch qualifying as much as Lewis, I suppose.
No.
I would probably go with Bottas as well. Anyone else? Any other?
Well, I think Bottas for me is the obvious choice, and I agree. For me personally, it's Alonso. Again, he had another charge through the field, albeit didn't achieve as much as Bottas, but had some fantastic overtaking. Really quite dicey.
Back to his best.
Yeah, and just it made it exciting. And, you know, that's what we want ultimately from our sport, is that we want it to be exciting.
Sure. Okay. Jensen, maybe a shout for Jensen too.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jensen.
In a McLaren that's improving.
Yeah, I think there's. Had a better race than they thought. I think the conditions helped them on Saturday, but they seemed to, decent race pace.
Oof.
So, improvements maybe. But yeah, Button and Bottas are my two.
Well, I was going to say, just because I'm British and proud, I was going to say Hamilton.
You can say Lewis, that's fine.
So, just because of the way, you know, he turned around the Saturday to the Sunday, the way he came out and he started, he obviously won the race. But I do agree with Bottas and Alonso, you know, straight at the restart, there was two drivers who really went out and fought and tried to overtake and gain places, and they were Bottas and Alonso. So, I mean, credit to them, but just for me, because obviously he's British, it has to be Hamilton.
That's fair enough. Go to the weekend. Anyone? Anyone who didn't?
On Saturday.
Lewis Hamilton on Saturday, yeah. I think we can. What a botch.
Ferrari on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, in general.
Yeah, Raikkonen. for Sunday.
Raikkonen for the Sunday.
Crash, yeah.
I was going to say Gutierrez, because he had quite good pace during the Saturday, but then in the race he just seemed not to have it at all. He dropped a long way back, and then tried to get revenge on Maldonado at one point as well.
Yes, flipped him in the air. Flipped him in the air, returned the favour from Bahrain, wasn't it, I think? Bahrain. Yeah. I wanted to nominate Williams, because Susie Wolf, obviously big moment, goes out in FP1, first woman to drive in a Formula 1 practice session for a very long time, and I don't know if it was their fault or not, but the car failed, oil pressure. Poor old Susie then has to put up with... Oh, of course, it was obviously her fault, even though Lewis managed to do the same thing in his car, and no one accused Lewis of screwing up his car with the oil pressure or whatever it was.
That did frustrate me with that, though, because you know that women can drive the cars. You know they should be given a good opportunity. And there was a lot on the BBC. The BBC made a real lot out of it. And I thought it turned into a bit of a gimmick for them towards the end. They're like, look, there's a woman driving. And then, of course, when something did go wrong, they... I don't know if it's just me who thought it, but I was just like, yes, yeah, it's a car, it goes wrong every now and again.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, Perez's comments.
Yeah, which didn't help. Maybe he was trying to be ironic. Maybe he should stick to signing his own caps. To be honest, I just want there to be, you know, some women on the grid. I think it would be brilliant to have some female drivers. Maybe it'll happen in the not too distant future. Team of the weekend? I've actually gone for McLaren, because I think they did turn it around. They got their recent updates working, by all accounts. They didn't really get them working in Austria, and they got them working at Silverstone, and a bit of promise there. They listened to Ron. Good old Ron.
Yeah, it's fair shake, yeah.
I'd agree with that. I think McLaren stand out the most, considering that only Williams and Mercedes even had one driver finish. Yeah. And Ferrari the same. So, I mean, Force India weren't really anywhere either, so, I mean...
Yeah,
the only one you can say who really stood out. Are they the only two to have? Yeah, it was only them and Toro Rosso had both cars in the top 10. So, fair enough, McLaren.
Yeah, can't say fair on that.
That was nice and short and sweet. Good, good. How about highlight then of the weekend?
I got a few.
For me, it was sort of just qualifying in general, just the whole thing.
Again, this is the second weekend we've had. Race weekend, we had brilliant qualifying.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was really thrilling to watch, and you didn't quite know what was going to happen. That's great.
You were there, Carl.
Yeah, it was brilliant day. My highlight would probably be the crowd, actually, because I was impressed. Even been there Saturday, how many people actually stayed behind and watched the GP2 and the GP3 championship and cheered on the Brits in that championships. And I don't think you see that at many tracks around the world. And there's still a huge crowd watching them. So, yeah, the crowd would be my highlight.
I missed it this year, but the last 3 years, I think, it's just a brilliant, brilliant place to go. If you've never been, try and go. I know it's a lot of money, but if it's something you really want to do, go do it. Any other highlights?
I have to say, it's a highlight. I wasn't going to say it's a good highlight, but the crash, Raikkonen's crash, and the chaos that caused, because you're just like, whoa. And, you know, just kind of... It sticks with you throughout. You know, you go on Sky Sports or BBC Sport, and they've got the videos there straight away. That's one of the things they're all talking about. So that kind of stood out to me, for definite.
Fair enough. It's all right when everyone's safe.
Yeah, that's it. It shows the wonders of Formula One again, and the safety of it, and it how far it's come.
It does indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with what everyone else has said here, but I think you've got to mention Vettel and Alonso tussle. Really, it was quite amusing with all the radio transmissions and. Swapping places and stuff. I think that was, for me, another highlight that's worth mentioning.
It was nice for race control just to ignore them,
yeah.
Which I thought was good. If only you say that, though, the bit where, of course, Vettel got past Alonso, the BBC had Christian Horner on air talking to them, and it was happening. It was brilliant, because you had Christian Horner go on, Sebi, ridiculous. But it's really interesting listening to Christian reacting to a situation where they quite easily could have crashed and gone off, and I'd love to know what he'd have said then, but that was great stuff.
And Horner has come out since and said, you know, bats off to the stewards for letting them race, letting them get on with it, you know, and not listening to them, just letting them crack on.
Absolutely, agree with that.
There was a bit of a sound though on it that they couldn't just get on with racing each other. It's like, he's run wide, oh no, he's run wide, and it's telltale, just race, boys.
I'm impressed with Alonso, how you could... in his mirrors, see that Vettel was running wide every corner.
But I think that's not. I don't think they're really the drivers. I think that's the nature of the sport at the moment. It's a bit overregulated.
That is, yeah.
Oh. You and Niki Lauda.
It's just like a footballer claiming for a corner when he knows there's not a cool
exactly. Like exactly. Yeah. There is a bit of needle, isn't there, between Sebastian Vettel and Fernando Alonso? There's been a little bit. They both had digs at each other yeah. over their titles.
I think Alonso doesn't see Vettel as a great, and I think he's sort of, he's happy to try and beat him every time because he thinks, you know, he believes that it's just a car that got on the victories. But
well, Seb's got to prove that it isn't at the moment, hasn't he?
I agree with Alonso on that point. To be fair, I think that's exactly it. You know, when Vettel's come in, he's got a new young teammate. He hasn't had the measure of him, really. He's, you know, he finished behind him this race, and yet Alonso's there. You know, it shows, even though the Ferraris, you wouldn't put the Ferrari and the Red Bull in the same class, in my view. I think the Ferrari's a bit further behind, but the racing they had was still, you know, top draw, even though Alonso was in a less good car.
All right then, well, I think we're done. Top stuff, gents. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back in a few days with our look ahead to the German Grand Prix at Hockenheim, which of course will be Nico Rosberg's chance to get one back on Lewis Hamilton, I'm sure. As usual, edp24.co.uk for my weekly column, this podcast, although you're listening to that anyway, and various Lotus and Caterham news. You can try the Twitter feed as well, at edpf1. Or you can get us all on Twitter-ish. I say all. You know what's coming. I am Michael J. Bailey, at Michael J. Bailey. Kyle?
At K. Cumbis.
Steve will remain silent. DT?
At Dave Tillett.
Richard?
At Vax_Kid.
And there we all are. Great stuff. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you all out there. And we'll see you in a few days. Bye for now.